Warning, the following episode of Warcides Uncensored Mind contains explicit language and adult content. The thoughts and opinions stated on the show are reflective of A.J. Orsini and his guests exclusively. But seriously, guys, the show is called Uncensored. If you got a problem with bad language, I really don't give a shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the part of the year where Orsini's Uncensored Mind delves into the WrestleMania Roundtable. We're supposed to sit down and discuss as a group all the wonderful things that will be taking place over the course of WrestleMania weekend, and we can't, because WrestleMania is whatever it's supposed to be, in some sort of closet or whatever the heck, I don't know. But I think we'll have a better time analyzing after the fact, so I decided to do something a little different here, and we're going to do an interview. I haven't done one of these in a long time, baby, and I had to reach out deep into the pockets, pull out a phone number to a man who is so interesting, I had to pull him out from WrestleMania weekend, and the first name out of my pocket, the obvious choice, the public enemy number one, TJ Marconi. He's in the house, you're in the house, everyone's in the goddamn house. Let's get this show friggin' started.
Welcome to Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and now your host, A.J. Orsini.
How the hell is everybody out there? This is your boy, your main man, your soul brother from another mother. This is your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. This is A.J. Orsini, and this was supposed to be the week. This was supposed to be WrestleMania. But I'm not really too into it. As I've expressed before in the past, we'll talk WrestleMania when it's time to talk about it. There wasn't much I could discuss beforehand. We're going to have to see what this car crash is and then analyze it after the fact. But I decided to do something a little bit more beneficial for my time and, quite frankly, more beneficial for your time. And I got a guy here today that I have been dying to talk to. This conversation has been a year overdue. I have got public enemy number one, heavyweight champion of the world multiple times over all around the country here. This guy is one of the premier big men in the game, in the independent pro wrestling scene. I am here with TJ Marconi. TJ, what's up, brother?
My man, thank you. That's a dope intro I got. I need to get that when I come out more often, man. That was dope. Thank you, AJ.
No problem at all. I'm going to start this conversation off with a story. It's a very quick one, but it's one that you've never heard before. And my audience is hearing for the first time as well, that involves you. So like I said a second ago, this conversation is a year overdue. We actually talked about doing this almost like a full year ago. We talked about doing this, and you ran into some personal issues. We ended up finding out that those personal issues were a lot deeper than we thought. We'll get into all that a little later on in our conversation. But some things had come up, and you weren't able to make it. Now, in the past, when I was doing my interviews in the beginning, I was having people physically over my house because I hadn't figured out all this cool shit that I got now out yet. So I was having people over, and as a little thing that I was doing for people who were coming over, I was buying little gifts, little whatever, just little a signature of things. Thank you. And one of the things that TJ is really into, and it fits perfectly into what he does in his wrestling deal, is TJ is a very big red wine guy. Is that true, TJ?
Oh, yeah. 110%.
Right. So I decided to go out, because I knew he was coming over to the house. I decided to go out, and I got this very nice red wine waiting for him. I had it all nice and everything. And of course, we find out later on that he couldn't make it. So I figured, you know what, because I'm not really that big of a red wine guy, but I'll drink it from time to time. So I said, you know what, I'm not really in a rush. I'll keep the bottle, and whenever this comes around, I'll have the bottle waiting for him. So I kept the bottle for a long, long time.
And it must be tasting good today.
Well, here's why I bring this story up. So I had it for a while. You know, wine ages perfectly. So I happened to have a family event over, and somebody stumbled upon the bottle. So I said, you know what? No big deal. We'll open the bottle, and if I ever get TJ over, I'll just get another bottle to cover for that. So I let my family member go ahead and handle the bottle. But for whatever reason, and I won't name names because they're probably listening to this, and I'm not having this fight again, they decided I would like to chill the wine, so they put it in my freezer to chill it. But they never bothered to tell me it was in the freezer. So we had like this whole, you know, everyone's having a good time, everything's good. Eventually the apartment clears out. Me and my wife, we go to sleep, and we're dead asleep, and we hear a loud bang sound, like this loud pop sound. And we said, what the fuck was that? Like, we really jumped. Like, we really thought it was outside, because my new apartment is ground floor level. So I was like, what the fuck was that sound? So, of course, I'm the man of the house. I got to get up, check everything out. I go in and turn on, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Everything's dark. I turn on the lights, and like some sort of a horror film, stripping down the side of my fridge is red sludge. And I was like, what the fuck is this? So I open up the fucking freezer door, and sure enough, the wine bottle had been in there for so long, it fucking exploded in my goddamn freezer. I got chunks of ice, chunks of frozen water, whatever the fuck, all over the goddamn place. Goddamn mess. But it made me remember, fuck, I got to get a hold of TJ, because this was the whole point in the whole deal. So here we are. Finally, we're back together here, you and me.
That is tremendous. That is tremendous.
So TJ, excellent. Listen, you're taking over the wrestling world here. You're what was the old phrase that says the longest overnight sensation of all time here. You've been doing this shindig for a long time, but it seems now like you're finally getting on a track that you wanted your career on in the first place. Let me start from the beginning here, because you're kind of a big boy. All right, you've got some size on you. When did that size really hit you? How old were you when you realized, holy shit, I'm getting pretty big here?
Probably sixth grade was the growth spurt.
Oh shit!
And then probably ninth grade was the last. Okay, now I'm 6'5". I'm done. I kind of stopped in ninth grade. I wish I grew more. I would have loved to legit be 7 feet. I said it to saying I'm 7 feet, but yeah.
If you're going to be tall, might as well go all the way with it, right?
I was already 6'5 on freshman year of high school, so yeah. I was a big boy.
Oh, so you've been dealing with this whole size issue pretty much since the beginning. Were you into sports at this time because of the height? Because I'm pretty sure everybody was trying to get you on everybody's team, right?
Yeah, well, everyone wanted me to play basketball, but I was awful. I could rebound, pretty much is all I could do. But no, I played football. Played football all throughout high school. I got recruited, but as most wrestling stories start, I got hurt in high school, so recruiting stopped. And then I went to college to be a regular human being, and get a regular degree.
Civilian job.
Civilian life. But yeah, I played football. I played tight end and I played defensive end. And, I was pretty good until I got hurt.
Was athletics kind of a goal for you when you were a kid? Because you seemed down on the basketball end, but football, was football going okay for you?
Well, yeah, we're probably going to do it. Since six, I wanted to wrestle, but I had no idea how to do it.
Okay.
So football was, like, the way in. You know, you always hear the road wars with football players or bouncers, and Lex Luger was a football player, and Ernie Ladd was a football player. So I'm like, all right, I'll play football, and then, football players become wrestlers. So that's why I play football.
Yeah, I think that's how JBL got in, right? Hurt his knee, and that was it.
Football players become wrestlers. That's what they were saying on TV. I grew up, so that was my end.
It's like, hey, speaking of which, I'd like to transition. So that answers my next question, which is, where does the wrestling thing come in? You said you were about six.
Yeah, WrestleMania. Watching WrestleMania 6 with my grandmother. So WrestleMania 11 when I was six with my grandmother. I was watching Kevin Nash versus Shawn Michaels. Looking back at that now, the match is horrible. But as a child, I thought it was amazing. I said, this is the coolest thing ever. This guy's a giant. He's a champion. He's got two blondes. I'm watching this. I was enthralled. That's like when I said, all right, this is what I want to do. I know Hulk Hogan and everything, the prayers, but that match in particular, for some reason, was like, all right, this is what I want to do.
I always whenever I interview someone and I ask, I always follow up with, do you have that pinpoint moment? Because I always feel like most people who get into our business have that pinpoint moment where they're like, okay, this is it. So for you, it was Shawn and Diesel.
Yeah, and it was like, I always watched wrestling, and I was like, all right, this is cool. You know, I remember, for some reason, I remember Demolition, which makes no sense given my age, but I guess the reruns or the Saturday mornings. It was, I remember Demolition. I remember Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. But watching WrestleMania 11, for some reason, that match in general was I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, so you saw the big tall guy with all the beautiful women and the adulation and the pyro and the championships.
Who wouldn't want that? I mean, it was the coolest thing ever. It was the coolest thing ever.
So you kind of said to yourself then, you're like, this is what I really want to do. At what point or around what age did you really start getting really serious about wanting to train? Because you got your growth spurt pretty early in your teens, right?
Yeah, I didn't know how to go about it. One of my best friends in high school is Sean Maluda. We grew up together, and he always told me to go training with his uncle. But to train with his uncle was a crazy amount of money, even with the family discount, so I kind of really couldn't do that. I started training after I got my associates in college. Okay. I had my degree. It's like, all right, I really don't want to do anything more. I want to wrestle, so I'm going to go through it now. So I was around 21 when I actually started to train.
And you're referring to Sean Maluda of Cruiserweight Classic fame, Sean Maluda.
Yes, yes. He's a relative of the Samoans who are all related to one another.
God damn it. I think the Samoans train everyone, don't they? At some point in time, if you want to be a pro wrestler, you got to go through a Samoan at some point.
Yeah, and high school, we clicked. He was training throughout high school, but like I said, I didn't have the bread. I didn't have the money at the time. Right. But, you know, once I did, I started training.
Because you said, okay, now you're finally training or whatever. I mean, the minute you walked into the gym with that height, that size, I mean, they must have been like, yeah, sure, come on in.
Yes, but they, like, ribbed me. Like, looking back at it, I totally got ribbed.
Welcome to the business,
right,
kid.
Right before I was about to start training with the Samoans, Afa moved down to Florida, so I couldn't do that. So I was recommended to a school in New Jersey, which was run by the BWO, and Richie Rotten and Magic was a trainer there on Sundays.
Okay.
I went there one day. You know, I guess they saw the size. They trained me. I was heavier. I was really heavy at the time. College was awesome to me. I put on mad weight from alcohol. And but they were like, oh, you ever trained before? And I was told to say yes, which is probably the worst thing to say. And I went through all the bumps kind of fine, like I knew what I was doing. And then they thought I was a worker, so I didn't have to pay, like, the tuition. I was paying a ring fee, so I kind of snuck in through the back door that way. I was always paying just, like, the ring fee and never had to pay a tuition for a school.
Okay. As a big man, how would you relate to – how did you translate into training in? Because you just proved that you could do a little something with them, but on the training end for yourself. How difficult was that transition for you?
It was pretty hard because I was expected to do everything that the lightweight guys do. So the way I trained was I kind of trained like a cruiserweight. I was doing all the lucha stuff, all the bumps, all the flips, even though at my size. And at the time, I was about probably like 450 when I started training. I was a big boy.
Ooh.
And I was still doing all these other, you know, everything the light guys were doing, probably killing my body way before I should have. But, yeah, it was definitely difficult because, you know, I hear other things like, oh, a big guy comes into school, teach him a few bumps, and then you get him a tryout, and the WWE takes him. It wasn't like that for me. It was like I got my ass kicked for a few months. I got tormented, not booked, you know, paid my dues.
So what you're saying is you're saving your Phoenix Down splash for the big events, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I did all that probably my first 3 years, killed my bump card. And now I don't do anything.
Right, I forgot. You're the guy who doesn't bump, right? I remember. Yes, yeah, you don't bump.
no bumps. No. I'll do it for the big shows. But, yeah, I probably did way too much stuff at training. I wish there was footage of it. It's probably some impressive things that I did during training that I should have done.
Some shit that probably
shows
would surprise you, right? Like, holy shit, I did that.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, I'd done that before.
You mentioned you were a big fan, obviously, Diesel, Sean. How did you take to the business originally? Now you're in it, you're doing it. Like, did you have one of those moments where you're like, fuck, what am I doing here, driving around for this bullshit money and blah, blah, blah?
Recently, yeah. Probably around like maybe 2 years ago when like the internet broke on me. I'm like, man, this is not for me anymore. The business is changing. But I mean, I'm still here. I'm still doing what I'm doing.
You overcame.
But, you know, yeah.
That's what I wanted to interview you, man. This is a story of triumph, man. I'm trying to get them to relate to you right now. We'll get to the downs and ups.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
But, at that point was the I'm like, man, this is not for me anymore. But I'm still here, so it is what it is.
Please don't leave. We need more fucking gentlemen in this business like you. Please, please, yeah, please, please. Yeah. But yeah, so you're 6. What are the actual attributes here? 6'6", 6'5"?
With everything, you always, like, they say Carmelo Anthony is 6'8", but I'm taller than him in person. So, I mean, I guess I could say I'm 6'8", right, but in reality, I'm 6'5". Right now, I'm around
short,
350.
So. Yeah. You said, what, about 350?
Yeah, I'm about 350
yeah,
right now.
You are fucking hauling freight, my friend. And it's funny yes, because sir. I've been in the ring with you, not as a performer, but just in general, just as an announcer or just doing interviews with you or whatever the case. And you're one of the few big guys. Like, you're light on your feet. You look like a big dude, but you're light on your feet. Because I've seen you come in the ring. I've seen you run the ropes and all that stuff. And that ring doesn't move that much. Whereas opposed to, I've seen other really dense guys get in there and the whole fucking building shakes. So you're a pretty nimble dude.
That was my main thing as when I started. It's like, all right, I want to be different and I want to stand out. So even though, like, Nash was my guy, I was like, all right, I need to be more like the Vaders, the Bam Bam Bigelows, the Big Boss Mans. These guys were huge, but they can do everything.
They can move.
So that was my goal. Talk. Nash a big boy, but
yeah,
like
he was
said,
kind of stationary.
He's heavy on his feet. He's heavy on his feet. You know, Boss Man would move like a cat, and that's what I wanted to be like.
As you're progressing through your career, I know I met you when I first met you earlier in the game. There, you were Mr. Good Times Only, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
There, Mr. Good Times Only, and you were exhibiting this big personality even then for a big guy. Talk to me about how much of yourself you sometimes lend to your quote-unquote wrestling persona.
By the time you got to see me, I think that's probably like my third gimmick. First, when I trained, I was given a gimmick. So I was first known as Mongo Marconi because I was a big guy. So I was told to be dumb and big, and I did it. I hated it. then I was like, all right, how about I do – I said, I can't be Diesel. So I looked at his WCW gimmick when he was Vinny Vegas in a loan shark. Right. So I said, all right, let me be a loan shark. I'm going to be big money, just big money. They're like, all right, that can work. I came out with, like, the tie and all the dress clothes that I sweated through, and I did that. That didn't really work. Then I did the paparazzi prince for some reason. I dyed my hair blonde. I was very outgoing. Like, I'm an outgoing guy. So basically,
absolutely,
like, when I was told your gimmick needs to be you times 100, so I'm like, all right, I'm big and I'm charismatic, so I'm just going to do that. So I did like a combination of, I don't want to say gold dust, like I wasn't like rubbing people down, but I was just out there. I was a big giant guy with big blonde hair and coming out to Lady Gaga. And I was like, all right, this isn't working. So that's when I went with Good Times Only, and I was just kind of being me. And I switched my name. I used my real name with TJ, and I started from there. Now here we are where I'm Tony Soprano meets Frank Sinatra, or whatever I'm doing now.
And how close to that is to you? Like, how do you feel more comfortable in this particular role right now?
Absolutely. I grew up Italian kid in Brooklyn. I'm not saying like, oh, my family's connected, but like it was people, like it was the way I grew up. It was, you know, a very Italian household, a very Italian neighborhood, a very Italian everything. So I was like, all right, let me use that with my character now, tone down my actual, you know, I don't want to say bubbly charisma, but like I'm a cool guy to like,
you're
I'm
a happy dude, hell yeah.
Guy. Yeah, I'm so let me turn that down a little bit and really lean into this persona that was kind of given to me by, you know, the internet turning on me. So sorry, I'll turn a negative into a positive, and you know, that's why I like this gimmick a lot more now. It's a lot more fun.
One of my favorite parts about what you do in the ring as a performer is because while you're very agile for your size, you kind of stay more to a traditional big man. You do move around a lot, but the way that your matches are constructed, we'll say, You are very conscious about the idea that you're the bigger man in that match. And sometimes that's either for good or for bad. A lot of pros, a lot of cons with that, because in today's wrestling, people tend to throw a lot of that logic out the window. But you stand very firm sometimes at a lot of things that you do bump for and you don't bump for. Talk to me more about how challenging that is for someone like you to try to convince some of these new age guys. Listen, we can have a decent match if you just follow along with what I'm telling you.
It's the hardest part of what I'm doing now, 100%. I don't want to say that I know it all, but like I just passed a decade in here. I've been a fan all my life, and I see what worked and what didn't. A lot of guys nowadays, like, again, this is, I'm pulling no punches here. They're just being marked for themselves, and they're not understanding that, like, yeah, it might be really cool to you and the guy you're working with, but like it's about the people paying money to come see you. Right. And if you watch wrestling through any era, nowadays, 90s, Attitude Era, New Gen, old Golden Era, the WCW, you know, the different territories. It's about eliciting responses from the crowds. And when it's a big guy versus a small guy, the biggest reaction of that match is the big guy taking his first fall. If it happens immediately, you kill that moment. If you build up to it right, you tell that story right, you're going to get that crowd to want to come back and or have a crazy reaction to that match. That's the hardest part I have explaining to younger guys now. I mean, I kind of got like a little bit of a stable of people now that are listening to me up in the Bronx, and they're understanding, and it's working, and they're seeing the crowds grow, and they're like, holy shit, this guy knows what he's talking about. But like when I was coming up and explaining to guys, I'm like, yeah, that don't make no sense. Why don't we do it there? We build it up this way. Oh, he's just being a dick. I'm like, no, I'm not being a dick. I'm trying to explain to you. It'll work later. It'll work at the end. Don't do it in the beginning. It'll work at the end.
I always tell people when I go to schools, it's like starting sex off by coming. Like, you can't start with your orgasm. You got to build to that bitch, and then eventually everyone comes at the same time. It's a fantastic thing for everyone.
What's been helping the most explaining to, like, when I'm training with people, it's like, all right, you know, I say, what's your favorite movie or, like, franchise? And a lot of time they say Star Wars or, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe. But say Star Wars, cool. You got New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. New Hope is you're establishing the characters and the babyface is going to shine. Empire Strikes Back is your heat, and the comeback and the finish is Return of the Jedi. So when you're booking your matches, book it as a three-part act and not just getting your shit in. Like, tease the thing in the first part and pay it off the third part. And that's kind of been helping out more so when I'm working with the newer guys.
It's awesome. A lot of the traditional style when it comes to, well, the heel normally calls the matches. Now we live more in a world where the more experienced person should be calling the matches. And I'm just so glad to see finally, you know, a big man that treats himself like a big man, carries himself like a big man, isn't afraid to do the job when necessary, but wants to do it the right way, and trying to convince these other people to do it with you. It's one of the reasons I respected you for so long, because I've been seeing you do that for a while. And that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I've seen the struggle. So I haven't been to the Bronx too much, so I'm glad to hear that it's paying off for you, not just for you, but for the company as a whole. It's great news.
Yeah. It's good. It's like the guys, they're coming on board. They're seeing it work. I'm like, you got to trust me, and it's working.
Just follow. Shut up and just do it.
Exactly. I was like, just listen to me. Trust me. It'll work.
Talk to me just a little bit, because when we met, well, the first time we met, if I'm not mistaken, I believe was an FGW show. But we've worked so many companies together at different time periods and all this other stuff. But one of my fondest memories is one of my good friends and you getting together, and I got a chance to call those matches over at House of Glory, you and my buddy Josh Glide.
It's my man.
Talk to me about how 2Click came about. Who was pitched to who? What was, like, how'd that work out?
So do we want, like, the truth.
Or Uncensored Mind. You give right, me so, whatever version you're willing to give me.
I mean, I pull no punches. So I was brought
pull
into
no
House
punches,
of
brother.
To,
go for it.
I was brought into House of Glory to basically. So I mean, Amazing Red and Brian XL trained their students very well. I'm not taking anything from them. I was brought in to basically teach, like, once their students got past a certain point, how to put together matches. So when I was brought in there, I was given, like, okay, the guys who passed a certain point in training, and they're on shows, but now they have to figure out how to wrestle on shows. So I was given guys that nowadays are like killing it. Evander James, Montegia, the New York Wrecking Crew, and then Josh Clyde. I was told that because so I can teach as many guys as possible, I was going to do tag team work. I was given Glide. I said, all right, we'll make it work. We'll do Nash and Michaels, except it'll be the opposite way where I'm the promo guy as, and then you're the guy in the background, and we'll improve it. And when you get better, you just take over the promos. So at first it was just like, all right, it was going to be a little bit of a run. I didn't know it was going to be permanent, but I love tagging with the kid. He took everything I said to heart and learned and executed immediately. I've been in many tag teams since then, before then, during, but Josh is my favorite tag team partner, hands down, that I've had.
I'm so glad
that he's back.
Yeah.
The kid is, he's super talented. He's missing a few things that could easily be fixed. That's, and it's mostly confidence, which I tell him all the time during his promos. And I'm so glad that he's back. He's definitely my favorite tag team partner. I enjoyed my run with Two Click with there. We weren't supposed to get over. We did. We had great matches with students, great matches with name talent like Santana and Ortiz. And there was no longer, they couldn't deny us anymore. We were supposed to be, you know, like a heel team that, even though we were doing heel things, the crowd turned us to the point where I had to go to management. I'm like, you need to turn us. We can't, we can decapitate a little child here and get cheered for it. Exactly what I told them. I said, you have to turn us. We cannot be healed anymore. Then they finally turned us. Unfortunately, Josh got hurt. Then I got teamed with Burgundy, another guy that I was basically teaching how to call matches. It was all right. It wasn't as good as me and Josh, but yeah, I love Josh, man. I know I'm going on a rant here, but Josh the man.
No, I love him. I love him. I've been working with him since he basically first put on a pair of pajamas and got in the damn ring. I've been working with him for a long time. Back during that brief period when I was promoting in Texas, he was one of the guys that I brought down there. I did the same thing. I agree 100% with you when you say things like confidence level and trying to get him boosted up and just feel like he knows what he's doing when he really does. He listens to the right people, you know, and so I always loved him. And I loved your matches together. You hit it right on the head. The Diesel, Shawn Michaels aspect of it, big man, little man, and same formula, waiting for that big man to bump, waiting for the big bump, because Josh would ping pong all damn day, and then TJ finally fucking hits the big one, bam. I mean, what fucking chemistry you guys fucking had. You're one of my favorite tag teams to call, because it's such a traditional – a traditional, like Josh is very new school, but you were able to keep him to a minimum when it comes to the crazy shit. And then, of course, your style. So it was just, it's an easy match to call, and the crowd's really behind it, and it was just a lot of fun. I had to bring that one up.
It was so easy, man. Like, the initial heel run, it's like, listen, go out there and do your shit and get the crowd behind the match, and then I'll come in there and slow the motherfucker down and make him hate us. And then when we turn babyface, it's like, all right, you're Shawn Michaels now. You're going to bump your ass off. I'm going to come in and I'm going to do the crazy big man shit. Get us over. And then we're going to take it home. And it was the simplest concept. And he got with it. At first, it was like he wanted to get everything. And I'm like, will you trust me? It'll come. And he trusted me and it worked.
Yeah. That was one of my I always told him, I remember how many, I don't know how many car rides. I was like, Josh, you could do 1,000 things. Can you give me 3? That's it. You could do so many impressive things. Just give me 3. Someone that talented, man. He's really, really cool. You already answered the other question I had for you, whether or not where he ranks with tag teams. You said he's one of your favorite tag teams of all partners of, of your career thus far.
100%.
Since we're
probably
not...
Probably, unfortunately, Carter would be number 2.
Oh, okay.
You know, I love Darius, the person. Darius Carter, the wrestler, sometimes is way too much. Yeah. But again, we just had a team like a month ago at Warriors, like some mixed, you know, like the enemies team up with each other. And like it was like we never not teamed. We haven't teamed in 4 years or 5 years, and we haven't missed a beat. So after Josh, it would be Carter.
Yes, you guys were part of a stable, right? Wasn't it you, Carter? Who was a part of that group?
Wow. At the height, it was me, Carter, Gangone, and the Minutemen. It was a tag team from New England. But then there was, you know, offshoot. It was like it basically became the NWO. Carter had a few guys in a company. I had a few guys in another company. Gangone had a few guys in another company. It just became crazy. But the main three guys, well, Danny Only too. The main guys were me, Carter, Gangone, the Minutemen, and then Danny Only. The Crusade.
And the name of that stable again was the...
The Crusade for Change.
Crusade for a Change. There it is. Was that a brain trust of another promoter, or did you guys just come together with that one and say, yeah, we're gonna do this and try this out?
Me and Carter were a tag team at Beyond that was like, you know, kind of held back. So we're like, all right, why don't we do this, you know, anarchy-esque angle. We took elements from, of course, like other stables that were, you know, ran roughshod, like the NWOs of the world. And we said, all right, let's be the promo guys. Let's be the horsemen of independent wrestling, where we're going to talk people into the seats. And that's exactly what we did.
Do you consider yourself one of the better promo guys in the industry?
I don't see many promo guys, so yeah, I'm gonna. I don't see many
so
promo guys.
You're the taking the belt by default.
at the time, you know, my promos were great. I think my promos were great, and now I'm kind of past the promo. I'm more about the movie. Like now, yes. I don't put out the initial, like, you know, take my cell phone up and cut the, you know, let me tell you, I'll be there, blah blah blah. Now I'm like, all right, I won't cut a promo unless I have. Hashtag dope, which is Will Coltrane and Johnny April. They have like HD up the ass cameras, and like we film little skits, little movies. If you guys watch my stuff for the past like I guess 2 years now, my promos are like watching short films. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm past the promo game. I want to make vignettes and movies.
You segued me perfectly into that because I was going to mention Hashtag Dope and all the different projects that you guys have been putting together. What I really wanted to ask about is how, because you've been doing this for a long time and you just hit it on the head, you don't really see too many promo guys. And if you do, it's guys for some reason filming in their fucking car or in a fucking basement or whatever the fuck it is. What do you attribute to this lack all of a sudden of just verbal verbal communication skills that wrestlers are not coming up with? What happened to the idea of the art of doing the promo?
All right, so... It's a multi-answered question, so you got to rock with me here.
Okay.
All right. First, the schools and the trainers now, there's no promo guys teaching promo classes. If they are, it's not really good promos. It's like, all right, the who, what, when, where, how, who, what, when, where, how, and why promo. You know, like Saturday in New York, I'm going to wrestle this guy. He's bad. I'm good. See you there. You know, there's no... real promo guys teaching promos. Like there's, you know, there's no Jake the Snake Roberts guys or Dusty Rhodes, the rest of the piece, like teaching schools and students how to cut promos and how to talk people into seats. Also, with the way the business is changing, the promo guys aren't the top guys anymore. It's the athletic guys, the technical guys, the flip guys that are the over guys, and that's what's the, you know, the, I guess the status quo of wrestling right now. Like Ricochet, fantastic wrestler, over with fans, can't talk to save his life.
No.
So when you have a young guy who wants to be on TV, sees Ricochet, I don't need to learn how to do promos. I need to learn how to flip. And you know,
because that's what's
kinda,
getting over.
It, you know, the Attitude Era was all promo guys. The Ruthless Aggression era, or the, you know, the, like the TNA era, it was when TNA was hot. It was, you know, Jeff Jarrett was doing promos and then the X Division was over. So it kind of, the business changed where it's like promo guys aren't over anymore. Now, when there's a good promo on TV, it's like, holy shit, you seen that promo. It happens like once every 3 months and it goes viral because there's no more promo guys, where it was every week in the 80s and 90s that promos were killing it.
Yeah. Jesus. So I better not share you. I better not share you any. Share with you any of my shit, because I cut promos. I go in. So
if wrestling is a pro, I don't know why it changed, but wrestling is supposed to be a promo business. It's supposed to talk people into coming to see you.
I just think a lot of the people that grew
up. I don't know.
Go ahead.
I don't know the exact point where, but you know, the biggest star in the business, the most money made besides Hogan was Austin. Austin did that because of the promo he cut. He cut a promo at the King of the Ring and got over. You know, so I don't, like, that doesn't happen anymore. It's like this dude does a 6:30 and gets over, but he can't talk to save his life.
It's so funny because I always attribute, I've had this conversation with other people. I say I think a lot of the people who grew up watching the Attitude Era loved and lived by the moment, but never actually picked up what really grabbed them, which was the talking. A lot of the people who grew up in the who grew up watching the business, who now become wrestlers, I just physically don't have the ability to speak. they can't do it.
It's baffling. The Attitude Era was promos and 3-minute matches. If you really watch it, besides the pay-per-views,
right,
the Raws and the Sunday Night Heats were promos and 3-minute matches. So I don't know what happened.
You have made quite a career for yourself in the last 10 years or so that you've been in this business, and you've had the privilege of doing something that many people dream about. You got the opportunity to stand in the middle of a WWE ring and do some shit, man. How the hell did that come about? Who called who on that one?
I was, so 2016. I think it's 2016. I wrestled Tommy Dreamer on a show. And he basically said, holy shit, you're a big guy. You can work. You have a good promo. You know how to bump well for a big guy. How come you haven't got a tryout? I said, I don't know. Why don't you tell me? He goes, all right, give me a week. I'll see what I can do. He literally a week later, he goes, all right, at the end of the month, you're going to be on Raw and SmackDown. You know, go there and wear a black suit. I said, all right, cool. Showed up. I had my name on a list. I had a tryout. I had the promo. It was a practice match. They liked me. And then Raw, we didn't do anything because it's a live show. At the time, SmackDown wasn't. So the next day, we went to SmackDown, and they go, all right, Sheamus is going to try to kick out Roman Reigns. Big guy, TJ, yeah, right. You'll be the last guy in. We want to really show off how big you are, and then Roman will spear you. So I said, all right, cool. I got like 15 seconds of fame or whatever. But instead of him spearing me, he goes, he's too damn big to spear. I'm like, no. I could bump. I swear. He goes, I know you could bump, but we'll do Superman punch. So, yeah. I got Superman punched by the champion at the time. And
too damn big to spear.
I should have promoted it more like the other people do now whenever they're a security guard or a nurse or a guy. But I was told it's like, you do extra work and it ain't about you. So I didn't promote it for like a year. You know, other people like were tagging me in it, but I never like said like TJ Marconi, SC on SmackDown, you know, and I should have to see all the other guys do it. Shit.
Mr. Gold, I'm the guy who got Superman punched the other day, guys. Yeah. That was me.
I see guys like,
I think the other line is a better promo for you. Not the fact that you got Superman punched. I'm the guy too big for the big dog to spear.
Yeah, I was supposed to be speared, and he's like, nah, he's too damn big to spear. I'm like, no, I'll take it. I can bump, I swear. And he's like, no, I know you can bump. I saw your match the other day. I saw your tryout match. Because they all watch. They all sit there and watch the indie guys do the tryout matches. It's pretty funny. They probably steal a bunch of shit that we do or whatever. Right. But, you know, it was pretty cool. It was definitely surreal. Like, there's so many fucking cameras. There's so many. They're like, all right, try to be hidden, and the camera's right in my fucking face. And I'm like, how the fuck am I being hidden right now? Because they didn't want me to be seen until I got in the ring, is what I was told.
They wanted to save the surprise size, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a fucking moving camera right next to me. I'm like, how am I not being seen right now? It's a giant fucking camera next to me. But yeah.
So we hired you because you're big, but be invisible for like a few minutes.
Basically what happened, they're like, just, you know, like, we don't want you to be seen until you get in the ring. I'm like, this is going to be hard.
You have done some amazing things in your career. You and I'm telling you now, and we'll get to this toward the end. I know you've put yourself on a short timetable, but I really do believe there are still big things ahead of you down this line. But in the midst of this career that you have had, the one thing you have not been short on is controversies.
Yep.
So the biggest one that I really wanted to talk to you about, because I want actually more clarification than anything else, because I'm not one of these people that follows the Facebook tabloid weekly, you know? So, like, I'll hear bits and pieces. So instead of listening to third-party bullshit, I'd rather just ask the man himself. I've got you here. Grimm Toy Story? Is that what it is? Grimm's Toy Store or whatever the fuck this fucking guy is? Yeah. This fucking Mark dude that came in and he was the first superhuman, right? He came in off of some YouTube bullshit. And how the fuck did you guys get paired together in this whole fucking thing?
So, the Grimm thing is over. You can't deny the guy is over. He was working with the company I was championing with at the time, New Jersey SWF. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, I did a babyface run. And again, you know, big guy, babyface runs get stale. I was probably about a year in, like, I want to turn you heel, but we want to use Grimm's toy show because they have a big following and it'll turn you heel and get eyes on the product. Now, I'm always of the, okay, these guys aren't trained. Am I going to get hurt? But in my mind, I'm like, all right, I'm business. I'm always business. I'm getting paid to do this. I'll make it work and I'll protect them. I'll teach them beforehand and we'll make it work. It was a slow build. My turn. And then the actual part of the day of my turn, I was like, all right, they're going to send out these, you know, the backyarders. But, you know, we want you you got to look like legitimately hitting them, which if you know how to work, you know how to make strikes look like they're deadly. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. I explained to all these kids, I'm like, you know, I pulled down the curtain. Even with Grimm, I said, dude, watch a lot of Vader. You know, Vader hits you in safe places, but it looks brutal. If you don't tense up, trust me, I'm not going to hurt you. Again, this is probably the first time, I'm like going into like real detail. I'm like, it's going to look like I'm murdering you. I'm barely going to be touching you. So that's the first one I did. Then the other backyard of kids came in. I said, all right, I'm going to give you, you know, I'm going to be giving you punches. If you feed me your neck, it's going to make a nice slap sound like I'm murdering you. Bump and feed out. Basically what I did. So I was giving it wasn't stiff. I didn't hurt anybody. But when you know how to work, right, you can make it look like you're killing them. The last kid comes in. I said, all right, I started doing Farouk's Dominator as a finish. I said, I'm giving you a Dominator. You're the last guy in. You know what that is. He goes, yeah, no problem. The last guy in, I'm about to give him a Dominator. He goes, I don't know how to front bump. He tells me this mid-heel turn. So I'm like, shit. In my mind, I'm like, all right, just give him that. But I'm already in the zone. Like, I'm already, like, I've beaten up, like, five guys with this heel turn already. So, like, I'm already doing Dominator. I'm already doing Dominator. I said, all right, if I whip him fast enough, I said, don't tuck your head. Just take it with your chest. Because at the time, that's the first thing that came out of my mouth. I'm like, don't tuck your head. Take it with your chest. I see he's tucking his head on the way down, so I whipped him as fast as I could so he would hit his knees. So I'm like, all right, he's going to be busted his knees, but he ain't going to be fucking paralyzed. You know, professional knows how to
protect the guy. He ain't going to walk, but he'll live.
At the time, I'm like, all right, he's going to have a fucked up kneecap, but he's going to fucking live. So as he's going down, I see him tucking his head like he's taking a back bump and not a front bump. So I said, all right, I'm going to give him a little extra whip. And if you even see on the video, I stumble because I whipped him so hard, so he would save his fucking life.
I recall, yes.
The footage went out, and the entire fucking internet broke, even the boys, which is the worst part. It's like the boys should know what a work is. And in my mind, I'm being told by like people, oh, just say it's a work. I said, no. I said, I got people believing in wrestling again. They think that I am the biggest piece of shit in the world. No, I'm not. I'm definitely not exposing it. And I told all those kids, I said, don't you dare fucking post it. You guys are all right. The internet thinks that you are dead. They think that I really hurt you. No, but you're losing bookings and stuff. I said, I don't care. I said, I got people believing in a real heel again. Even Grimm is like, dude, do you want me to put out a statement? Which, again, the Grimm, he's a backyard guy. He did try to at least learn the bumps to at least get through it. I got to give it to him. His business is over. The fucking little kids love him. He gets millions of views on YouTube. I don't know how YouTube works. How that gets over and good wrestling doesn't. But again, neither here nor there.
Yeah.
I even told him, I said, don't you dare. Go with it. Say that I fucking murdered you. Put on a neck brace. Put a black fucking eye paint on. I want people thinking that I'm the realest, the biggest piece of shit in the world. Not thinking that we're in, at the time, 2018. Everyone's super sensitive. The boys, most of the boys in the back are fucking super sensitive. Yeah. And everyone and their mother turned on me to try to blackmail me. And again, I'm being told, why don't you just say anything? I'm like, well, it's too late now. Now I'm just going to fucking run with it. I'm going to turn it into my gimmick. I said, everyone's categorizing me as the biggest piece of shit in the world. I'm going to be public enemy number one. And that's how I came up with public enemy number one.
And you are off to the goddamn races. Well, I got an answer for that. Even the boys fell for it, part because the boys today are marks. That was an easy one.
100%.
Out of almost still fans.
The guys who know wrestling look at the video and go, ah, it's a heel turn. Kids are fine. But, like, you know, Ethan Page makes the fucking post, I'm a piece of shit, burn my boots. Motherfucker, you're a mark. You just got worked. But all his little friends fucking... Everyone tweeting, everyone this, everyone that. I'm like, I can't fucking win.
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I saw the footage originally, I was like, man, he threw that shit. But that's you. See, that's me knowing you. So it's like, dude, whether you're a 20-year vet or a fucking yarder, dude, he's going to throw that shit the same way he's going to fucking throw it. He's a pro. He's been doing this shit for fucking forever. Yeah. You know, you're one of the few really, really big guys that if you would have fucking swung at me, I probably would have just fucking took it because I knew that you were doing it for the right reasons, dude.
Like, the kid told me, like, as I'm in the zone, like, I don't know how to front bump. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do right now? I've already have him up. I'm already ready to rock. I'm like, all right, I'm going to whip your motherfucking ass down and you're gonna be fine, but your knees are going
to
hurt.
He said, I don't know how to front bump. Well, you're going to learn today, son. You're going to learn today, man. Yeah, so, I mean, you got a lot of fucking movement on that. But you did legitimately lose bookings off that. That's real. That's the real deal. People really try to stay away from
it. That was the year WrestleMania was in town. I had about 7 to 8 lined up, and they all canceled on me saying that I was too hot of a the subject was too hot, even though they understand it was a work. We don't want the backlash. So, yeah, I lost a lot of bookings off that. A couple companies stopped booking me. People in the locker rooms had a lot to say. People didn't want to work me. But, I mean, I'm, you know, the elephant. You always got to be the elephant in the room. You know, you remember everything. So when all that shit went down, you know, technology's great. Screenshot and fucking notes. I had a list of everyone who fucking ran their mouth at me. And until this day, I have about maybe 4 or 5 left that I haven't seen in person. But you can guarantee people who ran their mouth seen me in person. I said, in a minute, we're going to go talk over here real quick. And if anything gets worse, we're going to go outside. And so far, everyone who's run their mouth has apologized coherent, like fucking, no, was it misunderstanding? I've said, but you took money out of my pocket running your mouth like that. So if you fucking open your mouth again, then there's going to be no talking. See, I'm a real man outside of the fake world of wrestling. And one guy actually got saved because of my respect for Dan Moth. One of Moth's students ran his mouth. I'm not going to name names, but Moth says, just please don't do anything to him when you see him. I said, all right, no problem. The first time I saw him, I pulled him aside. I said, your trainer saved your fucking life, but you need to fucking humbly apologize for what you did. And I explained to him what he did was wrong. He did. I mean, that is what it is. There's a few on my list I haven't seen yet. And I still haven't seen Ethan Page, but Ethan Page is the guy that probably will not get spoken to because he was the catalyst of this bullshit.
Oh, yeah. He was waving that flag hard.
Yeah.
I do recall that. Jesus Christ. So, well, you know, I always try to stay on the good side, shit like this.
I'll be honest, I wasn't
in the inside on that. I wasn't sure, but I knew you. And I was like, there's no fucking way that he's going to go out of his way to fucking hurt these fucking kids. No fucking way.
The best was people who knew me that wrestled with me before or, you know, I'm like, guys, you fucking know me. Like, yeah. I'm probably, like, way too soft and nice. If you think I'd do this? Yeah. I said, dude, keep it fucking moving.
Yeah, you exposed those fakes real fast with this one, huh?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, even, like, you know, like Dreamer at the time, as I actually hit him up for advice. He goes, I don't see anything wrong with what you did, but, you know, that's the society we live in now. That's the wrestling world. So just, you know, let it play it by ear and, you know, let it blow over. I mean, it's been 2 years. There's still probably some people who have things to say, but I think it's pretty much blown over by now.
You have worked so diligently. I mean, you even survived all this stuff that we're talking about now, and you've worked so diligently on everything that's been going on in your wrestling career, and for a short stint, your wrestling world almost crumbled on you, and it almost came to an abrupt end long before you ever wished it to be so. Talk to me about that. What happened? When did you hear the news about your situation? What was your situation? Can you elaborate on all that?
It was last year, so 2019.
Right.
I mean, I was running hard, man. I was I work a full-time job where I'm I'm like a account manager, so I'm always running around. It's not like a 40-hour work week. It's you know, you put your hours in, and it is what it is. I was working out for 4 or 5 days a week. I was training at least 2 or 3 days a week. I was drinking a lot of Monster energy drinks. So my PSA for children or whoever's listening to this is Monster energy drinks, bad. I was probably at the time maybe 4 to 5 Monsters a day.
Wow.
Because it was getting, I was immune to them. It was hard for me to stay up to do what I had to do. I came home from work in the gym. I was on the couch. My now wife at the time says I was purple and not breathing. She got scared, called the ambulance. The ambulance takes me to the hospital. No, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. They didn't know with the oxygen. I still wasn't breathing. The EKG, all that stuff, nothing was coming up. They finally did an ultrasound on my legs and my lungs. They found a blood clot in my lung, and that kind of just shut me down completely. That definitely throws you for a loop where you got fucking blood clots in your lungs and you can't breathe. And you're told that, you know, not only your wrestling career is off the fucking limits, but like your lifestyle has to change. The way you eat, the way you sleep, the way you live, everything has to change. I was put on blood thinners in the hospital. I was in the hospital for about a week. Got let out of the hospital, started changing my diet, and definitely no more Monsters. But the surprising thing is, like, even though I was eating clean, I gained weight, which was the weirdest thing, because I wasn't, like, filling my body with caffeine and wasn't running on, I wasn't running on, like, 120 miles an hour. My heart wasn't pumping that crazy anymore, so I put on a little bit of weight, which sucked. But now, I'm the probably healthiest I've been in the past year. Definitely still need to get like back to like the size I was at maybe a few years ago, but you know, it's a lot harder where you can't take pre-workouts, you can't drink coffee, you know, you got to eat a certain way. So yeah, that was very scary. You know, not only losing a career, but almost losing my life.
Yeah, you know, when I opened up that question, I stated career because I really thought that was on the line, what was on the line here. But now that you've gone into more detail, it was a lot more lot more risking on the life here. You mentioned earlier, and I didn't want to get too deep into your personal life there, but you were recently married.
Yeah.
Was this incident before or after you got married?
It was, I was actually right before our engagement party.
Oh.
So yeah, this I never want to blame it on like getting married, but like that extra stress on a mind and body, like you know, anyone who's been married knows planning a wedding or an engagement party or just going through the process is fucking stressful.
Absolutely.
Plus the amount of other stress I was putting on my body with wrestling and work and training and gym and. Yeah, my body just said, like, you need to stop what the fuck you're doing and reset. So yeah.
Stop it or I will stop it. It was one of those
deals. What happened.
And when you were going through all this, you were recovering and you were changing your lifestyle. Did you ever, how close were you to just saying, you know, if I do improve this, why would I jeopardize this by going back?
I was like, you know, I had a lot of my, like, the closer friends in wrestling, like, saying just, like, dude, there's other things in wrestling you can do. So I started focusing on that and realized, like, I kind of do like that aspect of wrestling. So I was close to, you know, completely calling it quits. I was a champion in 3 different places at the time when this happened. So I vacated titles. I mean, it's all kayfabe, it's all bullshit. But, like, I always felt like I had responsibilities to these places. And so I was like, at least I got to come back and put somebody over and do the right thing. So I was like, all right, I still got to come back to the ring. I got to come back to the ring. Once I got like the initial scare over with, I got rid of the clots. I didn't have to take the blood thinners anymore. And then I basically decided to keep going to the cardiologist every week. And I would always be like, dude, I want to wrestle again. You know, at least I want to go. I want to go out the way I want to go out. And he's like, if you eat right, I'll clear you. You know, give it like 4 or 5 months. 4 or 5 months came, still didn't clear me. I kind of got back in. I would say I think it was between the 6th and 7th month era where he cleared me, and I slowly got my way back in last year. This year I kind of slowly got myself back in. Quick squash matches, quick matches, to the point where I'm at today, where I'm not 100%. I'm probably at 30% of my best. So but 30% of me is still 100% better than a lot of people. And that's not me being cocky. It's me being, truthful. Me rocking at 30% of what I normally am is still better than a lot of people.
Well, you're a smart worker. Not just because of the size and because you've had to be precautionary. You're just a traditionalist. You're an old school guy. And you're just a smart worker. Legends don't attach themselves to guys who are just good workers. They attach themselves to guys who are smart workers, because legends want to continue to be legends, and they don't want to get in the ring with people that are going to be reckless. So you've clearly established yourself as a guy who's very smart and very capable at what he does, so I commend you for that. But you just said yourself, you're still going through the motions. You're still trying to better yourself physically. You made a statement on social media not too long ago, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 2 years. You had a 2-year plan.
New Year's Day, I made the post, and it was just for me. It wasn't to get fishing for likes or anything like that. It was to hold myself accountable, because I know if I put it out there, then I can't go back on it. If I'm not, I don't want to say that, I hate the word, I'm getting signed. If I'm not somewhere of note, if I'm not working on a contract to wrestle, then I was going to retire, which is, crazy to say as an indie guy to retire, but I was going to completely cut back and, just do the backstage stuff I'm doing. I'm still going to do that. I have everyone telling me not to. Believe me, it's every day where I have a guy like Astro Morales breaking my balls. He goes, you're not retiring. I go, yeah, I am. If I'm not anywhere by the end of the year, I'm sticking to my word, because there's a lot of things I am, but I'm very fucking prideful and I'm honest. And when I say something, my word is my word. So, by the end of the year, if I wasn't somewhere, I'm not going to say if I'm on WWE, I'm not going to wrestle, but there's WWE, there's AEW, there's Ring of Honor, there's MLW, there's, if I go to Japan, if I go to Mexico, if there's something outside of a bigger indie, that's my goal. If I don't hit that, then I'll be 11 years in at the time, and it's time for me to step back, because in my mind, what I've been telling people is when TJ Marconi's on a card, he's got a main event spot, and I didn't want to be that guy where I'm 10, 11 years in where I'm not getting anywhere and I'm taking away a spot that a younger guy could use to learn from. This is the, I kind of hate the guys that are the 15-year, 20-year vet that take away from the young guy. And I don't want to be that guy. So if I step back, that means there's a new spot for another main event big guy that I won't be taking up, and I can help that guy without taking the spot away. I don't know if I know it's kind of convoluted, but that's kind of what my thinking is behind it.
Yeah, no, it's not convoluted at all. I understand what you're trying to say, but that sounds to me like more of a mental thing. I have to follow up now and ask the question after everything you just described. Is this more of a mental timetable? Is this you saying, I want to go out on my own terms and I want to excel in my career? Or do you feel now that the sand in that hourglass on your physical body, now considering everything, is where you're really basing this decision on?
It's a combination of both. The scare with the blood clot definitely sped up this process. I also, the frustration of wrestling. The big guy wrestler, or the wrestler that I portray, is not the in thing per se right now. Guys my size are expected to do a lot more. Not saying I can't do it, but I just don't want to be like the rest of the other bigger guys that are signed. The business in general is definitely different than what I grew up liking or what I like about wrestling. Not saying that the wrestling that is out there now is bad. It's just not for me. There's definitely money in wrestling to be made. But again, like, no disrespect to Joey Ryan. Joey Ryan is making money in wrestling by having people touching his dick.
Yeah.
The Orange Cassidy is making money in wrestling by being whatever Weekend at Bernie's gimmick he's doing. Like, sure, I can put on a fucking brown leather jacket and be an action hero and probably get over as shit being a fucking action hero wrestler who doesn't bump, does a fucking exploding punch or whatever, and probably be over as shit. But I can't do it because that's not the wrestling I love or wrestling I like. So that is another reason behind it. And it's, you know, it's frustration. You know, taking the step back, I had to take back because my body basically told me to stop. And then seeing, okay, God forbid, I cannot become the quote-unquote actor. There's always the director role. And I'm getting pretty good at that director role.
Yes.
If you
I can vouch for that, yes. I got a chance to see it myself recently. You took a place that I used to go to all the time and just shake my head, and I went back – and I watched your version of that place, and of course I don't want to be too vague to my audience. You have a very high leadership role over at BWF in the Bronx, right? Where a lot of people know that I used to roll once. I am a former BWF World Tag Team Champion. Thank you very much,
my man.
But no, it has a different vibe. It has a different feel. If you're listening to this show right now, and it's been a while since you've been to Darrell's, check out these shows because. I'm talking as both fan and former performer. It's a completely different vibe. It's a completely different show. The matches are far better than they've been before. The talent is of higher quality. And, of course, with you running on top, you just had a hell of a match with Dominic De Niro not too long ago. You're running programs in the Bronx, which rarely ever happened. Going from show to show, following these different ideas going through, it's far more interesting. And now that you've got the social media and the YouTube thing going on, that's going to be even better. You know, I got to give Bronco a little bit of shit here for a second because I'm the one who hooked up his projector all those years ago. He's still, and I was so mad when I saw, he's still using my 50-foot HDMI to go to the fucking thing. And the whole point of giving it to him is because when we were doing 2KW in that building, I was doing Trons. Like, I was working that screen live. And he was asking me all these questions on how to do it and all this stuff, and I was showing him and da-da-da-da. And he never did anything with it. I don't know what happened. And I was like, oh, man. So I was like, dude, you got the screen, man. Fucking use it, man. But I was like, no, the presentation is great, though.
I have a segue into BWF. BWF always had like this stigma, or for some reason, that the ring work wasn't good or the performers weren't good.
Not for some reason, because the ring work wasn't good. He was putting people on the show that shouldn't be wrestling.
Yeah, so I mean, when I moved up, you know, when I got engaged, I moved closer to where BWF was, so that became like the closest school for me. So I went there. At first, I was just a performer, and for some reason, like I was told that Bronco always had like, you know, right hand men, I guess, running his show, but he really trusted me to the point where, you know, things happened with the guy who was helping him, and he asked me to help him out, and I said, no problem. But I said, if I'm going to do it, like, I need you to legit let me do it. And I heard that was always his problem, where it's like he didn't really let people do it.
No.
And he trusted me, and you know, I've had we pulled down the curtain. I've had the book for a little over a year there, and the place is a total 180 there now. The only thing I don't control, it's still him, is like who the champions are. Because the minute I took over the book, I didn't want to be champion because I said if I'm going to write, if I'm going to help produce an agent and write stories and say, okay, maybe, you know, let's get a production guy and let's focus on this. I don't want to get the stigma of, oh, he writes himself as champion.
Right.
So he always has final say on champions. To pull back the curtain even more, he didn't want me to drop the title both times I dropped it during the run I had the book for the past year.
Yeah.
He got angry at me because I did it without asking him. But now he's kind of, he's getting okay with Dominic. You know, we let everyone know what's going on here. Like when I dropped the title to Jaden, I got my ass chewed out. And I basically told him, I said, if you trust me, it's going to pay off when we do the cage in November. Like I cannot be babyface champion going into that match. Has to go to the heel. He still gave me shit, but it is what happened. Then, you know, I think I'm getting stale as a babyface there. So I said, all right, I got to drop it because, you know, I'm getting the Roman Reigns treatment where, you know, it's a getting stale. Dominic's the next guy. He wasn't about it. I did it anyway. I got shit for it, but it is what it is. Dominic deserved it. He trained his ass off. Good fucking worker. Busted his ass to put on a hell of a performance. And I told him he was winning as he was pinning me. So, you know, the first time I won a championship, it happened to me that way. So I have this tradition if when I'm going to drop it to a guy who's winning his first title, I basically, like, rib him and don't tell him until he's actually winning it. So I don't know if you watch the footage back. As he hits me with the cutter, he's covering. I'm like, see you next month, champ. He goes, wait, what? What? And he wins. So he was, like, legit dumbfounded, which was pretty funny.
That's a lot to be putting on a guy like Dominic De Niro, who is just now really getting his feet wet. What is your connection to this guy? How far along do you see this guy coming?
I've been training at BWF for a while, and he's been coming in for like probably the past little over a year. And over the past year, he's consistent. He's always learning. He's a hustler, you know, and I just felt I had good chemistry with him, and he needed it's a bad word. The title was needed on him to give him more confidence and to elevate him so he now can work on his promo game and work on his character. Because sometimes, you know, a title is given to a guy who needs to elevate. Like an example, when Ahmed Johnson needed the IC title, like Dominic De Niro needed the world title to elevate his game and character even more. So it fit. Right.
As the guy who, quote unquote, has the book here with the Bronx Wrestling Federation, he's your top guy. Is he the type of guy you feel comfortable booking around?
For the time being, yeah.
Okay, so he's going to have to earn that from you then.
Yeah, the top guy at BWF, I call him my Hogan, is Brother Greatness. He, besides me, is the draw. Brother Greatness is the draw. The super over, the cruiserweight champion, no one, like, he's the draw. And I told Glide, you need to be Piper.
Oh, Jesus.
If he's Hogan, you're Piper. So I said, that's your destination. I said, in between, we'll tease the tag coming back. You know, the people listening are getting this year's storyline. But again, with the pandemic, who knows? I'm going to have to, you know, shotgun everything anyway, you know, because I legit sit down with the team, like Bronco and two other people. And, I don't know how many other companies do this, but I I've been writing the stories and then I map it out 3 to 4 months at a time. So like when I book guys or the guys come to the training, I'm like, well, yeah, we'll use you. You either going to be a main guy or you're going to be a filler guy because what's drawing is the storylines.
Right.
Indie companies don't have storylines. They just have matches.
And that gets stale. Yeah. It bugs the shit out of me. Yeah.
I'll make you the guy, but you need to commit to me. Because I'm going to write out because what's going to happen in show one affects show two, affects show three, and then pays off in show four. But if you miss show two, it fucks up show three and four. So you need to, like, you need to make sure you're here. Like, I legit sat down and wrote out to at least, I have some stuff that went out to November, and then most of it went out to August with the storylines we have going. This pandemic, you know, I might have to shotgun a few things. So, I mean, I told Glide, I said, dude, you're back, you're rocking, work on your promos, work on your cardio back, and then you need to be the Piper to Brother Greatness's Hogan, if that's what your character needs to be like or your headspace needs to be in. And he's coming to it pretty well.
That's great, man. You're doing a fantastic job up there. Please keep doing everything that you're doing up there. Listen, you put yourself on a time schedule. I wish you the absolute best. I know that you're capable of doing so many things. I have personally seen it.
And now that I see the fruits of your labor transferring onto all these other careers that you're touching, and the fact that you're able to absorb all of this fucking nuclear heat and still keep on ticking, baby, you are a real one. You are a real one, man.
I tell people, I said, don't tell people that you know, my real personality, because then you'll get heat that it'd be associated with me. But I mean, that's kind of, I don't know if that's still happening nowadays, but let's see.
Yeah, it wouldn't fucking matter to me anyway.
If you drop my name and get heat.
Yeah, that wouldn't matter to me anyway. You know me, baby. I don't give a shit about all that fucking thing.
Man, but people don't realize there's a real life outside of this wrestling world.
Listen, I'm not going to take you too much farther away from that beautiful wife of yours. I know you've had a long day with this whole corona thing going around.
I
haven't been mentioning it because I'm trying to give people a distraction from all that, but I know you're going through some stuff. You guys are being safe, right? You guys are doing all kinds. You guys are okay over there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just wash your hands, wash your ass, change your clothes every day, take a shower. You'll be all right. I got knock on wood here. I've been around thousands of people a day, and I haven't got anything using that. Wash my hands, wash my ass, change my clothes, take a shower. So my advice
works
to anyone is literally do that.
TG,
it's been working.
Yes, TJ, man, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for talking to me here, brother. And I wish you the best, man. Keep going, and I hope everything works out after this pandemic is over.
Absolutely, and then we'll be back. I'm going to take you up on that red wine. So.
Oh, you know what? Next time I head up to the Bronx, I'm going to bring a little with me, and we'll celebrate together, baby.
My man. Thank you.
All right, guys. This was episode 134. Man, this was a fun time. It was an interview with Public Enemy number one, TJ Marconi, man. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. And, of course, thank you guys for enjoying episode 134.
100 episodes, now pay him.
And make sure that you buy my husband's T-shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/AJOUM. Please, he needs this.
Listen to my daddy's show. He's the best, so I don't know.